Welcome to the Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. Today, I talk with Amy and Jennifer Hood of Hoodspa Design. We talk about odds and sods, connecting things, and answer your questions in this Ask Me Anything style interview. All right after this. Are you ready for an adventure? Then get your Creative South Adventure ticket today. This is the ticket for you. It's a full day of adventure that includes catered breakfast of the National Infantry Museum with a tour following, a bike tour down the Riverwalk on the Chattahoochee, catered lunch at the Civil War Naval Museum with a tour after that, finishing your bike ride at the zip line that crosses over the river to the high ropes course, whitewater rafting down the largest urban whitewater course in the world, ending with a wild game dinner at Epic with s'mores by fire on an island. That's all Tuesday, April 4th. This also includes an invite to the VIP dinner Wednesday night, as well as everything that comes with the regular ticket. A full vacation and an adventure in one day. Are you ready? We've gone through and streamlined the Creative South Podcast Patreon page, cleaning out the excess and making it easier for you to support us. With options starting at just $1 per month, you can help support the podcast and even wind up with some cool Creative South Podcast swag. Every dollar helps cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. When you become a Creative South patron, you'll get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, Creative South podcast stickers and t-shirts. So, please help support the podcast and become a patron over at patreon.com/creativesouth. So, Amy and Jen, thank you for joining me tonight.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. We're excited to be on.
You're welcome. I'm excited to do the podcast this way since you brought up the whole AMA style. And,
yeah.
You know, we'll go through and ask a bunch of questions and figure out how that is. But first off, why don't we give everybody just a kind of little taste of who y'all are? Amy, if you want to go first.
Oh, we're doing our own intros. Okay. Oh, who am I?
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, you know you better than I do.
Do I know? Jen, we should do each other's. I'll do yours, you do me. Okay.
Okay.
So let's start out with Jennifer. Jennifer Hood is the mathematical genius behind Hoodspa. She does all of our accounting. She's one of the co-founders of Hoodspa Design and Connecting Things, which is a monthly meetup that we founded with some of our friends. In Orange County, we also have locations in Colorado Springs, Texas, and Kentucky. And then she also co-founded Odds and Sods, which is an accessories line. And she has an amazing twin sister named Amy Hood.
And Amy Hood is all of those things. Plus, she has probably seen every single episode of every WB television show. Is the WB still a thing? Wait, no, it's CW
now. It's called CW now.
That just shows how fucking old I am. So she's seen every single episode of every show on the CW. She's probably seen every Lifetime original movie.
You're going for quality programming.
Oh, yes.
It's one of those, okay, I'd like to defend my honor.
Wait, I will say that it's not because Amy chose to watch those things. It's because she's literally watched every single thing on Netflix and probably seen every movie ever made. I don't think Amy sleeps. I think she's a robot. When we're all asleep, she probably goes and solves vigilante crimes. And I think she's also working out behind my back because she's become the skinny twin. It's like a constant battle between me and her.
Yes, but Jason, I'd like to add in that I have to go to the gym like twice a week, and Jen just sits at home and drinks hot chocolate with Kahlua and Bailey's all day, and she's still the same size as me, like to the naked eye. As a twin, Jason, you have twins, you get this. Like,
I do.
The worst. I'm like, I'm working so hard here, and Jen is like just rolling through.
It's better for your character, Aim.
Thank you, Jen.
So y'all are fraternal twins, and I have identical twins.
Yeah, I know. I always wonder if that would be different. Like, I want to know what identical twins, what that feeling is like, you know?
I mean, I can say as a parent, I have the most fraternal identical twins out there. There is literally 3 inches difference in their height and about 30 pounds different in their weight.
Oh,
in their weight.
Get used to pretty much every person you meet telling you that your doctors were wrong.
I'm already used to it.
People tell us that too. They're like, nope, they're wrong. I'm like, oh, thank you, stranger who knows nothing about my medical history. Thank you for clearing all of that up. I'm so excited to have met you on the pier.
Yeah, I get told that constantly.
So funny.
I've been used to it because my kids were born premature.
Us too.
So that's where how premature were you?
We were 2 months. I almost didn't make it, Jason. It's a good thing I'm here on this podcast today.
Well, I'm glad that you made
it. Thank you.
Mine were born at 28 weeks. So
wait. That seems very early. Am I wrong? What are you supposed to be at?
3 months early.
3 months early?
Yeah. So you're born at 40 weeks generally.
Yeah. How big did they weigh in at?
2 pounds, 3 ounces and 2 pounds, 15 ounces.
Okay. Somehow we were smaller, but we were later, but yeah, that's still dangerously small. Yeah. Gosh, that's so cool that they made it and they're probably stronger for it.
Well, you know, you've got 20 years on my kids. Yeah. So I think that may have to do with the advances in medical technology.
For sure.
And my wife's doctor literally forcing her to drink milkshakes made with carnation instant breakfast.
Oh, yum. I'm not going to lie. That sounds delicious.
I was pretty happy about it. Unfortunately, I'm still trying to get off that weight, and it's been almost 8 years.
I've heard that men like gain as much weight as women, but it's like harder to get off because they're not eating for two. But like, you know, your habits change if your wife's habits change.
Well, when a woman has a baby, she drops 40 pounds in a matter of minutes.
Yeah, I guess we're lucky in that way. But also the pain, Jason, the pain.
I'm not saying that I'm cut out for pregnancy at all.
I'm just putting words in your mouth now.
Oh, no, that's fine. I'm used to shoving my foot in my mouth anyway. So.
Same.
If somebody else does it for me, it makes my job easier. So, you know, you guys grew up kind of all over the place, but mostly in Kentucky. Is that right?
I would say the formative years were in Kentucky. So those are the ones where you really become the human that you're going to be. Like it was probably fifth grade to sophomore year. And so, that was what the time we spent in Kentucky, and I wouldn't take it any other way, honestly. Like, we grew up on a farm with cornfields and a barn, and my grandma lived right next door. It was her farm, and my cousin lived next door to her, and he lived with us for a couple of years. It was just such a cool way to grow up. Like, there was one road into town from the country. Well, you know, one of the main roads into town, and was by our house, so we would just watch all our friends drive by and honk and stuff. It was so cool. It was the best upbringing, and we learned how to work really hard because Southerners, man, you guys know how to work.
Yes, we do.
They instill it in you young, and it's good and bad. Like,
this is very true. So, how did you end up where you are now?
Pretty much when we were sophomore year. We had one of those teen life crises, and we just realized that if we wanted to do more than we were, and if we wanted to kind of give ourselves a chance to start fresh, that we might have a better go at it if we moved in with our dad, who was living in California, and we were visiting him once a year anyway, so we were already pretty familiar with the area, and we just figured, hey, let's move in with dad. We'll establish residency so we can try and go to a UC or Cal State school. And it just seemed like a good point. A lot was changing in our lives. And so we just kind of like made the leap. And it's been a really big blessing ever since.
Gotcha. So you move out there. When you get through high school, do y'all go to college or do you just kind of dive into finding yourselves and working?
Yeah, finding yourselves. That's so funny. Honestly, our mom always instilled in us really young, and my grandma, that college was like the be all and end all. And I think it's because, like, you know, my grandma grew up in the Depression, and they didn't, and she was a woman too. So they didn't have the opportunities that, you know, we have today. And so it meant so much to her for us to get that chance that she didn't get, you know? So it was really important for her that we went to school. And so we always, you know, we started going to a community college because we for some reason, our residency just didn't kick in time, so we were going to have to pay out-of-state fees. So we did community college. But then, honestly, community college is this, like, crazy time warp. It's like an episode of the Twilight Zone. Like, you walk in, and it's 2004, and then you walk out, and it's, like, 2020. It's like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's just, we got stuck in this, like, rut. This rut that I think a lot of people do when you go to community college, and you're working a full-time job.
We were kind of like a pool vacuum. We had no clear trajectory. And pretty much, again, by divine intervention, someone walked into Amy's coffee shop that she was working at, because like all cool kids, Amy was a barista.
I was a barista.
And so he walked in and he saw that she had done some nice chalkboard art on the coffee menu. And so he
pretty much, so Amy, you were a proto hipster.
Oh man, I was like, I was doing chalkboard art.
Amy had such a severe side part.
I mean, it was like, yeah, it was pretty bad. It was pretty bad.
Remember those plaid fedoras? We had
these photos. I was rocking this plaid fedora. And at the time, I want to say it was like really hot, and now I understand how like those photos that you look at of your parents, you're like, how did you think that was cool, men wearing like 3-inch you know platform boots? And then I looked at that photo from like 2004 and I was like, oh lord. Yep, oh lord, it's happened.
But anyway,
I look at pictures of me from high school and I was in overalls.
That's awesome. Like, there is nothing
the
to be
hell
ashamed
was I
of.
Thinking
were you in the FFA up.
Do what now
were you in the FFA Future Farmers of America?
No, I was not.
That would have been so much awesomer. Oh, I always wanted to be too, but I didn't know anything about cows or growing things.
I knew I didn't want to be a farmer, so it didn't seem like a logical
honestly
choice.
That's good. That's good. Good for you. Good for knowing what you wanted to do early, unlike us. Yeah, we've long
I didn't say I knew what I wanted to do. I just knew I didn't want to be a farmer.
Hey, you knew what you didn't want to do, and that's the start. And honestly, that's what we tell people. Like when I was working at that coffee shop, like we had no idea what we wanted to do, and all I knew was that I was having a really hard time in my fine art classes. Like I just didn't really feel like I had something that I wanted to say yet, you know, like of my own volition. And so I just knew I needed to find something else. And Jen had taken a design class. And so I thought I would take a design class. And I realized that design is this amazing thing. It's this amazing practical art form. And and then like Jen said, this guy that had been coming into my coffee shop for 4 years, like who was like a super cool guy, super cool friend, just gave us an opportunity. And anytime I tell a story about something good that happened to me, it feels like it always comes back to community, to being
sure,
being active and having friends and just being a good person that people want to talk to. And being a barista is like that. You're like a bartender, but no one's drunk. They're just like highly caffeinated. So they're just like spewing their problems at you and you're not getting tipped nearly as well.
No. Yeah. Dollar every five coffees.
Yeah, exactly. But dang, we used to rake it in though. Me and Francisco were like the most popular baristas there because we would listen and we knew people's orders. We would make like $80 a morning. It was insane.
Nice.
Anyway.
So you get through you discover this design class that Jen's taken, and you know, at what point do you decide, hey, we should do this on our own?
Well, I will say it was not a decision. We were not that glamorous at that point. Uh-huh. We were still kind of aimless, and so
we were just
necessity was the mother of invention, and pretty much the coupon clipper that we were working at, so glamorous, I know, folded and it went under. And we realized that even though we had worked there for 3 years, I think, where we had pretty much done the whole, we had made 3 whole magazines, done all the advertising, all the client interaction, all the proofing, all the articles to make it look like a real magazine. We had done all that ourselves and learned a ton on the job and had a ton of work. We just didn't have any good work to show. It was all Botox ads and mop catalog ads and things like that. And we didn't have a college degree, which I think at the time we kind of said, oh, we don't have a degree, we're not worth it. And we were like trying to apply for these jobs and we just didn't have the right credentials and nobody really thought we were worth anything, and we weren't, to be honest. So I mean, we were, but we just hadn't proven it through our work and we hadn't pushed ourselves to do enough side stuff.
Yeah, we didn't have the portfolio that really showed.
So really we realized, hey, this is our opportunity. We just need to do anything. We can't just sit around and wait. We've just got to start like connecting with those friends who asked us to do a CAD cover like 2 years ago and say, hey, I can do it now. You know? And I got a part-time gig at a magazine, and pretty much Amy, like, full-time went into us just starting what we called Chutzpah. And eventually when we built up enough client roster to where we could both do it full-time, I quit the magazine and we both just did that. So, again, gotcha. Not glamorous. We weren't brave. But ever since, we realized, like, hey, stop sitting around waiting for stuff. Like, that worked out well. Let's do more of that.
Yeah. And as much as it's a good idea to plan things, like, we've never been the type that will plan for years and years or even months and months or even weeks and weeks. Like, we're very much like do a test group. Try something. Try it small. Get it out there and see how people respond. So when we realized we wanted to start this business, like, I remember I had a boyfriend at the time, and we made a website for me in like a day. We made a logo in a day, and we just got everything up and running in a week. And we were just like, we just got to get this going and just see if anyone responds at all. And we just posted a bunch of stuff to Instagram. Like, we took any job we could take that seemed cool, and we did as much as we could, you know, reaching out to old friends, like Jen said. And it was just totally blasting the internet with, hey, we're here, we opened, we're doing freelance, like, please hire us, like, we're doing really cool stuff, don't you believe us?
Well, I mean, so you mentioned that, but and you've grown significantly since you started. How were you finding clients at that point, aside from just, you know, asking friends and hitting people up? Because, I mean, at a certain point, that's not sustainable.
Surprisingly, it was.
You only have so many friends.
Surprisingly, really. It's just so weird. We were so involved on social media, like, that we would post something. And by that time, it sounds crazy, but working at that Coupon Clipper, pretty much what it was a glorified Coupon Clipper. So it was supposed to look like a magazine. So me and Amy built up so many connections trying to create interesting local content, writing articles about people. So for 4 years, we got so embedded in the community through that Coupon Clippers. And we knew so many people on Facebook and Instagram that when we did post those things, we had a huge network of companies who were following us there. And when they saw that we were doing our own work, they already knew us from doing their ads in those Clipper magazines. Those were the ones that we first got for clients, I would say, besides friends and family. And then I will say that, like, it wasn't glamorous, the work we were getting mostly. It wasn't really getting paid what we eventually realized we were worth, but it was an amazing opportunity. They were really gracious to even let us have it, and we needed it to just cut our teeth and get used to freelancing. So,
sure.
Yeah, I think it's a huge thing that people need to do is keep in touch with the people that you've grown up with your whole life. Like, I can't tell you the people that come back around and their friends that were just in bands. It's always friends that were in bands. I don't know why they're so entrepreneurial, but they are. They just know, like, this life won't last forever and I have to do something else. And they would always come back around, whether it was like doing a CD cover or they were starting a pasta company. Like my friend Danny Nicoletto, he started his own pasta company. And those kind of things, I can't tell you how awesome it is when you keep in touch with friends who are talented. It always comes back around. And I think it's all about who you surround yourself with. You know, like, if you're hanging out with lowlifes, like, obviously none of them are going to have work for you because they're not starting anything on their own.
I need you to have a talk with all of my friends who are in bands that I did CDs for. Because my lowlife friends. Because none of them went on to be entrepreneurial.
Oh, no.
I mean, they're all doing fine and doing jobs, but none of them are entrepreneurial.
Well, I will say that our location might have something to do with that too. Like, living in Orange County and being so close to LA and San Diego really does give us a huger audience to pull from, which is a super awesome thing.
And all of our friends from Kentucky ended up moving to Nashville because they were all into music. So that group has also given us like a nice core on the East Coast of, you know, business. But honestly, back then, that was before social media. Nowadays, you can build a community anywhere. And that's the amazing thing about that, you know, about younger designers coming up is you don't have to move somewhere big like we thought we did. You know, you can stay in Bowling Green, Kentucky, and you can get connected via Twitter. And you can, you know, you can go to conferences now. There's so many design conferences, like Creative South and Creative Works. Like, and it's worth the 2 to 3 hour drive, you know? So nowadays, there's so many more opportunities, and I used to scoff at conferences until I went to my first one, which was Creative South, by the way, shout out, and it was the best experience, honestly. I couldn't believe how many amazing people I met that I still keep in touch with, and even though there are other designers, like, they've referred me a lot of work because, you know, if it wasn't a good fit for them project-wise, they obviously want to put that person in good hands, so, you know, they'll be like, oh, it wasn't good for me, but maybe Amy would be a good fit for that. And they would refer me, you know? So you know, I think that's a good way for people to get out there, even if they don't live in LA or New York or Nashville.
Gotcha. So I know one of the things that you've done is you wrote, you know, from your experiences, is you guys wrote an ebook. What made you decide to do that?
To be honest, when Mike Jones invited us to speak at Creative South, we had never done a talk before. And at that time, starting our business was still so new to us. As far as it being us finally thinking we kind of got a grasp on how to do it. So based on our talk that we planned for Creative South, we started writing all these notes. Okay, how do we start our freelance business? Let's just make our talk about that. And when we were done writing all of our notes on the computer, it was like 60 pages. So
it was a novel.
So we're like, well, this is going to be a really boring conference talk. And it was. I'm so sorry, Mike. It was a super boring conference talk. But it was very informative. And what we did is we just copy edited it and refined it down and then just made it into an ebook because we were like, hey, this has real value beyond just a talk. Like, this is something that someone needs to have their hands on, you know, on their computer easily.
I specifically remember, like, we got one of the bigger rooms for our talk. That's back when you guys would have like two or three talks at once. And mm-hmm. I remember Mama Sauce was sitting in the front and it was Big Sombrato and back when Hogan was there. And I remember Jason on 29th from We Are Stewart and all those guys were there and they were all so nice and they were being so supportive. And then we started and at the end, I looked back at the front row and I was like, wow, we really fucked that one up. We just talked so fast and we were reading off of this like worksheet that we had printed out for the whole talk. Like we were so nervous but everyone was so nice anyway. And it was a great conference as a first one to go to, I have to say. And if anyone hasn't been, you should definitely, you know, carve out the time and money to go.
Gotcha. So I have another quick question about your book. How do you sell out of an ebook?
Ooh, interesting.
Well, pretty much it says sold out because we don't want to take down the product. We put it, we didn't want it to be available for print anymore because it's been three, 4 years since we wrote that. And we've learned so much more since then. And so we've been in the process of rewriting it, and rewriting it has taken a lot longer than we expected just because, you know, crystallizing
that pesky day job stuff gets in the way.
Yeah. That, yes, that. And after starting to teach the professional practices at the design college here, having to like put it into coursework has also given us a lot of great resources that we wanted to add to the book. So it's just been taking a lot longer, and we didn't want the old one on there because the new content's just like eons better. So we just took it down.
Well, that makes complete
sense. So that's how you sell out.
Gotcha. Well, if you are ready, why don't we dive into some questions from people and see what you all have to say.
Ooh, cool. Aim, let's do Sound rapid fun? Fire. Let's try and get as many of these
Ooh,
in as we
yes,
can.
Yes, yes.
Okay. So the first, I'm going to go with the highlighted ones first. So the first one is from, I'm going to butcher this, but at Jordan.
Kuehler?
Kuehler? Yes. What made you want to launch Odds and Sods, and how do you girls continue to keep it going?
Ooh, that's a fun one. Odds and Sods has been, like, hands down the funnest project that I did all of 2016. And we started it probably around Thanksgiving of 2015, so at the very end of the year. But, you know, I mean, it didn't really get rolling until about January. So, and the whole reason we started it was because we had been making like just one-off pins for Chutzpah, but it felt like kind of a side note on the Chutzpah site, and it didn't really have its own life form. It felt like it was just for designers. It felt like it was an afterthought, and we wanted to start making more passive income, basically. And we were like, this could really be it. You know, like pins were super hot at the time, and there was only like one other person doing them. It felt like back then. Now it's such a saturated market, but yeah, so we were like, okay, well, we don't want to pigeonhole ourselves and just be a brand for designers. So let's separate this from Chutzpah. And so we decided to name it its own thing and basically create it as its own business. That way, if it really grew, we could sell it potentially, and it would be able to, you know, prove its numbers on its own, and it wouldn't be confused with like, oh, well, it was attached to Chutzpah, and so, you know, and that kind of thing. So that was kind of our thinking behind separating it out, and it's been so much fun, and it's created a really nice little passive income just over the first year. Like we sold what, Jen, like $30,000 worth.
I will say though, it's not as passive as it will as our goal is for it to be, but like the goal is that eventually we could hire on one person who could be the manager of the shop, and
exactly.
really the main thing we would do would just be the fun part, designing stuff. And then the passive part is where we pay someone who's like hourly is way lower than ours to, you know, ship it and be that client manager and client relations with the vendors. Yeah. And so at that point it would become more passive. Right now it's very active.
But it has to be. It has fun. To be the beginning, because if you want anyone to care, like you have to be there showing them why they should care about a new brand. Because there's so many new brands, just like we were saying. Like the pin market especially is so saturated. So showing how you're different, how you're unique, and why they should care about you is huge. And I feel like the best way to do that is just to be in person in your in someone's space and you know, selling them with your excitement levels. And whether that's going to wholesalers, potential vendors, which we've done a lot of this year, which has been great, or whether that
I was about to ask.
Yeah. Or whether that's going to like pop-ups or, you know, trade shows or something like that. Like we did Adobe Max and it was amazing. Like we sold a ton of stuff and it was awesome getting in people's space and them realizing, oh wait, Chutzpah does this? Or, you know, I didn't even know you guys had a brand line. So just getting yourself out there and honestly, you can't say it enough. Like I've still had friends come up to me and be like, wait, you do odds and sods. I'm like, yes. How many times have you seen me post this on my Instagram? Jeez, like get with it. But you really just can't talk about it enough, you know? And so, yeah. So
and Drew Melton actually asked us a question about it. He was asking like, how do you find your brand voice and how did you find one for odds and sods specifically to make it work as its own unique thing? And that was something that we did find out more. Like at first, I mean, like any life form, any baby doesn't have self-actualization or self-realization when it's first born. Like I think you're just kind of floundering and trying to figure out how to breathe for the first few months. But eventually, and I think it did happen when we started getting more involved in community pop-up shops and that kind of thing, we started to get a feel for the kind of people that were reacting to it and interested in it. And seeing who was reacting really did help us to kind of hone in our brand tone, even though we intrinsically knew like how we liked to talk about it. And I think that's because we were genuinely doing stuff that we liked, which is a lot easier than trying to create a brand around something that's not natural to you. So I would say being unique to your own brand voice, and it doesn't have to be that quirky, witty tone that a lot of people are good at. You know, a lot of great brands aren't witty, but they're very valuable. And I think actually having more of a serious tone does kind of separate you out as something that has a little bit more longevity and more staid quality. Like me and Amy have been kind of intentional about not having just like really only snarky pins. We love snarky pins and they're awesome, but there's so many people doing that so well that we didn't want to just be another person doing probably not as good snarky pins. So we're like, hey, what's something that we could do that's uniquely us? And we're probably the most nostalgic like people ever, hence the Lifetime movies. But and so we're like, let's think of the places that we love and try and memorialize those, and let's like treat it with just like a little bit more seriousness to carve out a unique niche for us, you know. And when people started responding to that well, we were like, okay, I think we found something here. And we just started running with that.
Gotcha. So following up with that, I'm going to ask one from Atlas Supply. I didn't know you could put dots in there.
You can.
But, .co. I didn't know you could do that. So you've kind of already, we've already established that you have another business venture, other than Chutzpah. So we'll skip over that part of it. But what are the next goals for Chutzpah? And I'm going to add to that. And what are the next goals for Odds and Sods?
Ooh, yeah. So for Odds and Sods, I feel like we had a really great like initial year of just trying to get ourselves out there. So I think next for Odds and Sods, it's finding, just reaching out, just doing the legwork of reaching out to new wholesalers and getting new accounts. Because for our product, it's such a small thing, right? It's only a $10 pin, you know? So, me fulfilling all those orders is a lot. It's a time waste for me. If it was a bigger item, like just posters, and that would make sense. But finding wholesalers to stock it and to give us like bigger orders is our goal for that. And, in order to do that, we need to increase our line. So figuring out new designs, we've definitely kind of figured out this year which pins work and which ones don't. And so kind of building on what we learned this year. And we also don't want to just be doing pins because obviously that might be more trendy. So we've gotten into bandanas, and we're definitely going to make this next year the year that we figure out the bandana thing and kind of get some of those printed. We printed one at the end of last year and it went over so well. And so we're really stoked to kind of branch out more and kind of make this more of a serious brand than just, you know, just pins and patches.
Gotcha.
And then for Chutzpah,
go ahead.
Oh yeah, real quick. Well, our goal there is, up until now, we have been definitely easily coasting on people just writing in and asking us for work. And this is the year where we've started saying, we're not taking on new clients, which we aren't. We're very busy. But instead of just keeping on saying yes to what's just being asked of us, we're going to start intentionally going after brands that we really want to work with. And because we've built up a nice nest egg and we have good ongoing clients that, you know, give us a security net, I think we can do that without really worrying about it, which feels really good. So we're going to start asking for what we want.
Gotcha. So, and, you know, speaking of what you want, I'm going to ask one from Amy GZMN.
Oh, Amy Guzman.
Yeah.
Amy Guzman.
She's awesome. Okay. She's local.
So she said, how did you start first attracting those dreamy clients that could also pay you what you felt you were worth?
It's kind of funny, but it's, again, those friends that we made initially. They obviously, like, they're going to want to grow in their career too. So when they would leave somewhere, they would end up going on to work for another bigger or better company. And that just kind of continues on. And if you treat a client well, even if it's a small client, that doesn't matter. Like if you get things to them on time, if you work with them and let them know you're on their side, like that will come back. And so all those people that we did that for when they had small businesses, now that they work for bigger businesses, they've been coming around. And so far that's been, you know, how we've been getting these gigs is just through keeping in touch with people. And sometimes that even includes, like, if we work with one client, they'll often refer us to their clients, their friends, which are bigger clients. So, like, for example, Jen was working with Beyond Meat on some things, and they referred us to Sir Kensington, which was, you know, gave us even more work. And then they referred us on to this really awesome person that I can't say who it is because we haven't quoted them yet. But it's like a huge project. And that's because Jen did a great job on, you know, that one client's work. So it's funny how if you treat a client well, they want to be your proponent. You know, they want to tell their friends about you.
It is hard, though. That's a little less, like, easy to rely on for people who maybe don't have that one friend yet. So on another note, I would say trying to up your game on your personal brand and how you're presenting yourself and proving your value before they have to ask you to. So using your website and using any chance you can to put some volume on the fact that you are a professional is key. Mm-hmm. So how you present your pricing, even if someone asks you for a quote, or even if someone asks you for a proposal, making sure that those things look so top-notch and professional is really, really important to show that you belong at the table even to begin with. And then also proving that you're an expert by just talking about your field in a way that shows that you are. So using your blog or Medium or podcasts like this to show that you are a voice that has value in the community, I think makes higher profile clients want to work with someone who is high profile in their industry. It's like, yeah, there's a lot of people who can mimic Jessica Hish's style, but Target and Starbucks want to work with Jessica Hish because she is Jessica Hish. She is the outspoken leader perceived in that community. So make yourself that by starting to get those opportunities and asking for podcasts to interview you or whatever, you know?
Yeah. And our friend Josh, shout out to Josh Ariza. I'm paid to give him a shout out on every podcast I do. he's like a huge proponent of this, and I have yet to try it, but he swears by it, and he has amazing clients. And I think
as far as asking for what you want.
Yeah. Huge. Yeah. That's his huge thing that he tells students all the time is email people. The worst they can say is no or ignore you. And most of the time they'll just ignore you. So you don't even have to get that, like, ego break of hearing no. It's just, you just forget you even sent it. But yeah, you need to be emailing people and telling them, hey, I want to work with you. Cause they may not even know you're there. And I think he used to have an agent, and I have some friends who have gotten agents. So if you think that's worth it to you, you know, finding someone that can help you, you know, who has the context to get you into that upper echelon might be worth it. It might be something to look into.
Just as a case study, we force all of our senior graphic design students in our professional practices class. They all have to write 4 cold emails to high profile companies they want to work for. And so we had them all do it, and they were all, like, dreading it and hated. They didn't want to. And half of them got responses. They weren't.
I feel their pain on that.
Yeah. And it is. It's so nerve wracking. And
it's so nerve wracking.
You feel like you're not good enough. But just to prove it, like, one girl who was for sure that she wouldn't get a call back from this person. They at least wrote her back and said, hey, really interested in your stuff. We don't need anything now, but please check back with me in the spring, which really says a lot. Like, he's not turning that person down. He's saying, just get back in contact later. So that's, it really can be that easy. If you do enough of the numbers of sending enough emails out, like, the statistics will eventually be in your favor for something.
And that's a crazy small test group that we have. Like, I think our students in our class were, there was only 18 students, but I would say like at least 50% of them got a callback. Two of them got a job. It was crazy. So anyway, according to our small test group, 50% success rate.
Gotcha. So since you shouted out Josh, I got to ask a question from Zach Wilkinson.
Nice.
It's, how does it feel to be cooler than Josh Ariza? And how do I get to be that cool?
Oh my gosh, I love Zach Wilkinson.
We're only, I will say we are only cooler than Josh Ariza because now he's technically a dad. So,
or he's cooler than us. Dads are
cool, but we can still run around and be super irresponsible.
Fair enough. Yeah, I guess dads can too, but you're not doing a good job of it.
Right, I know. You're
not
like
a good dad at that point.
Dependence on you and stuff. We can wreck our lives, which isn't cool, kids. It's not cool to wreck your lives.
Dad bods are super in right now, though, Jen. I think he might be cooler than us.
Yeah, no, definitely 100% Josh Ariza is way cooler than us.
He actually is, but we're trying to perpetuate the myth that he's not.
So Frankincense wants to know, when did you know design was the direction you both wanted to go in your career and life? Was there like an aha moment or was it a lifelong dream?
I'd say I read that question. We were those lucky people who had an obvious talent, which I'm so grateful for. It's like, you know, some people are good at sports and you're like, oh, good, you're good. You know what you're going to do. And some people are good at math and accounting and it's like, cool, you know what you're going to do. And we always were good at art. And so I think it was kind of a natural progression. I always feel bad for people who don't like have a very clear skill. They're just like good people. It's like, I guess at that point you have so many options. You just got to kind of just try a bunch of stuff and see what works.
But what if you don't have any skill and you also hate people? What do you do? Like, you're screwed.
You're a developer.
You become a day trader.
Developer or day trader. That's too good.
No, day trader would be even better. Yeah. Day trader is definitely the answer to that. I don't think there's any day traders who listen to this. There may be some developers. So.
DMV clerk.
Yeah. So Blake Ash 2 wants to know, how do you manage your time? How much effort do you spend in planning stuff out so as not to overwork and burn yourself out?
Dude, we are all about like not working too hard. And my goal is to retire at 36, which means like I really need to get moving. But we had a friend who retired at 36 and now that's like my new goal because that sounds amazing. And when I say retire, like I don't want to quit designing. I just don't want to have to work. Like if I want to take 3 months off and go to Barbados, like I want to be able to do that.
Barbados?
I don't know. It seems exotic. But
Jen, apparently you have different thoughts on vacation places.
No, I like witch doctors as much as the next guy. But I mean, I will say that ever since we've started, what we do now is, as far as time management, like at the beginning of each year, we pretty much plan out the year based on last year. We say, okay, this is what we did last year. What can we do this year to get a little bit better at working less and making more? So upping our game in perceived value, because I think you can always do that more. And then by charging more, we have a little bit more free time to do stuff that we like or to just sit and be still for a moment.
Yeah, because what
we do is – oh, yeah, sorry. What we do is we plan out each month. Like we know we need to make a certain amount of money to like reach our goals. So then we break that down by, okay, optimally we would get 2 logo jobs with our existing clients and their average amount of services that they need per month. And then with probably like 1 illustration job, good, we're set for that month. And so that's what we kind of take month by month is like we know kind of what we need to book. And then we try and book in advance more now. So right now we never take on clients immediately unless it's like a dream job. We always book out. It sets a good precedent and it separates out people who maybe haven't planned ahead for their project as much. And then besides that, I would say just time breakdown, what it's end up becoming is probably 50-50. Like 50% of the time is just planning and management and business development and invoicing and that kind of stuff. And 50% is actually doing like creative work. And that's because we are trying to get higher profile clients. And there's so much more work with those clients in just courting them, proving to them that you have knowledge and that you're capable in what they want to do, and then selling to them the project. When you get with clients like ESPN or Facebook, half your job at that point isn't just designing, but it's like really proving to them that it was worth it to them to pay you, because you're showing them why it's the right decision. You're not just giving them the decision, you're showing them why it's right.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I got a question that kind of ties into that from Dylan Mengus. Is he wants to know what software you're using for, you know, project management and accounting and all things, so that, you know, that 50% of the time where you're putting the back end work into keeping things organized and scheduled, that you're able to move forward.
Yeah. For our project management, we really like Trigger. They just recently redesigned. No, Trigger. Trello's great. We use Trello for our lists. We use Trello for our lists, and then we use Trigger, which is where all of our subcontractors track all of their hours on our projects. So that's how I track all of our hourly design work. And that integrates directly into Xero, X-E-R-O, which is what we use for our accounting and for our payroll. And I love Xero. It's awesome. And besides that, if... sometimes with really big ongoing projects, which we don't really do as much of anymore, like we don't really do those 2-year website projects. We did a few, and we just don't do as many anymore. We used to use Basecamp for stuff like that. But at this point, we just use Dropbox for file sharing and sending documents and syncing files between subcontractors, and then those other programs I just mentioned.
Gotcha. So I have a question, and Amy Guzman basically had the same thing of, when did you want to decide you needed to hire people onto your team?
Oh, yeah. That's kind of hard, because even though we decided to do that, we've completely changed how we do that now as opposed to how we did it at first. Like, I think at first you start to realize that when you need to hire people on is when clients are starting to stay around. They're not just hiring you for a logo job and then leaving you. They're hiring you for a logo job, and then they start to hire you for ongoing work, like monthly flyers or, you know, like web work or social media work that's ongoing. And for that kind of work, it makes sense to hire somebody who can, you can tell them the style, you can show them what you've been doing, but they can take that style and that brand guide and just run with it. Like, it no longer needs to be me, like, designing and setting, you know, this, you know, higher, it's like, I don't know. I was trying to explain it to a client the other day. I was like, you don't want me doing ongoing work for you, because I'm too expensive for that. Like, you know, you should hire somebody who can just do production work and follow this style guide that I made. And so once you kind of reach that point, it's, if it makes sense for you to keep that client on, you should find someone who can help you, who's able to follow a style guide. And
here's your options on that one though. So if you as a freelancer are trying to figure out if you should hire someone, and you value the flexibility of being a freelancer and being able to sometimes work a lot and sometimes not work a lot and keep weird hours, don't hire someone on full time. Don't even hire them on. I mean, you might be able to hire them on part time. But sure. The problem with actually hiring someone on is now you're responsible for not only making sure you get enough work to pay for your income, but now you have to make sure that they always have ongoing work. And that becomes like almost a part-time job in itself. When there's not enough work, you still have to pay them out. So what we've done instead, because the kind of work we do fluctuates so much, I mean, we get different clients every month and the style changes. And that same person that is not always the best fit for every job. So now we just have a network of go-to freelancers, subcontractors that we use per team as they fit. So they know that we're not promising them constant work. We're just saying like, hey, when you're a good fit and if you have the time, I'll run by you a rate or a quote or what our budget is. And if you're interested, do it. And that's how we work. Now that's how we've expanded our team while still keeping what we appreciate most about freelance, which is being flexible and not having too many people relying on us, because that's a lot of work. And then you start becoming more of a manager and a CEO and less of a designer. So.
Gotcha. So, you know, the common theme through most of these questions is about your time management. And, you know, since you're doing Odds and Sods, since you're doing, you know, Chutzpah, since you're teaching at LCAD, what are you doing for yourself?
Right, yeah. Dude, I know, sometimes I think about... And
aside from planning trips to Barbados.
Planning our future, yeah. I know, and we do connecting things, which is if you're in California, Kentucky, Colorado, or Dallas area. Like, you should check it out. It's amazing. It's kind of like a knockoff of Creative Mornings, only because we didn't know if we were going to get accepted into Creative Mornings, but we love Creative Mornings. But anyway, but yeah, it's a lot of work, honestly. And I felt so burnt out by the end of last year. And so you have to take time to take a break. And that's why this year, when we did our planning at the end of the year, we said, okay, we're not taking on as much work as we did last year. We're at the point in our careers where we can start saying no. And it doesn't even matter if we think it's an awesome job. If it's rushed, we're not doing it. Like, it's not worth our sanity, you know? So, I think it's just figuring out, you know, like, what's the things that stresses you out the most, and figuring out how to take those off your plate. So, like, for me, it would be managing subcontractors is so stressful for me. And so I'm trying to do less projects where I need exterior help, or, you know, other than people that I know I can trust. I don't know, Jen, like, what's it for you? Like, what stresses you out the most?
I would just say that, like, I found that usually when I'm stressed, it's because I don't have a clear system or procedure already in place to deal with it. So if you start realizing that you're getting quotes like every other day for a logo, and every single time you get a quote request, every time you get one, you email them back a unique email, and make up the information every single time, you're wasting your time. Instead, create a common quote deck, a really nice, well-designed template that in certain places is customized and unique to the client who's requesting the quote. But make your life easier. Like, find ways that you can simplify what you're doing by creating templates and, you know, automated things. And then also a way to make your life easier is find a way to get loyal, ongoing client work. Because once you become familiar with a client and they trust you, so much of that laying the groundwork is removed. You already have an ongoing agreement established. You already have a rapport with them. You know their style. You know what they want, how they work, how they communicate. And so that takes out a lot of the stress. So if you can get half your work as ongoing loyal clients that you already know and are familiar with, and then half of your stuff being new to add excitement into your workflow, then it does relieve a lot of the paperwork and just stress. So
that's true. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And we...
So what do you... Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, just for personal, like, just for, you know, take the time for you, like, take lunches, take breaks. Like, that's the best part about being a freelancer, is that if you're not having a good day, like, if you're not feeling it, if nothing's coming out, you're just like forcing it, then like, stop, go to the beach and take a day off. That's kind of what I've realized too, is like, I got to start taking advantage of the perks of being a freelancer, which I never used to do. I used to be such a workaholic and just work like 18 hours a day, it felt like. Cause we have awesome jobs. Like, this, being a designer is the most fun. And sometimes I forget that it's work and that it still will exhaust me.
So aside from taking lunches and all, what are you doing? What do you do for fun?
Like Jen said, I'm kind of a Netflix junkie. Netflix, and I just can't help it. And the reason I watch such terrible TV, by the way, I'd like to say, is because when you've been working so hard all day and like using your brain to think of these complex solutions for these big companies, like the last thing you want to do is be stressed out by like Breaking Bad, in my personal opinion.
Like, you don't want to watch something you have to think about.
Exactly. Like, I want to turn my brain on the off mode. And to me, that means investigation discovery, like watching Forensic Files. Like, I love Forensic Files. That's like my favorite thing. So so that's kind of what I like to do to relax. And then obviously, like, we live right by the beach, like a block from the beach. So as much as I can, I go on walks, I go on bike rides, we go and lay out because it's always summer here, except for right now. Like, just be outside, honestly, be taking in new experiences and new people. And that will in turn inspire your work, you know? And traveling is a huge thing, which we've been allowed to do because of these awesome conferences. That's been a huge way to get inspired and to just realize, you know, the way other people are living and, you know, experience different cultures and stuff.
Jen, what about you?
Definitely. I'm a big fan of just like sitting in a room and listening to an Audible book or something like that. But also I love hanging out with people who aren't designers. I also love hanging out with designers, but I will say that it's really relaxing hanging out with someone who has a completely different set of life problems and life goals. just like finding common ground with someone who's completely different than me is always very fun. So meeting new people in new social circles is a blast.
Cool. So I'm going to do some really rapid fire ones real quick as we kind of get close to our time. Amy, what are you watching?
Like I said, Forensic Files, but also, oh, I just started watching this show yesterday. It's kind of embarrassing because it's an MTV show, but it's called Sweet Vicious, and it's about this woman, Vigilante, and it's pretty entertaining so far. So I'm watching that. And, oh, Search Party on TBS. That one's really good.
Gotcha. Jen, what are you listening to?
Oh, right now I'm listening to Neil Gaiman's, Neverwhere. Which apparently was a show first. I don't know. Someone told me it was a show. I had no clue, but I'm not. I don't watch the BBC, but it's awesome.
Okay. Sorry, I scrolled too quickly. What's the weirdest IMDb realization you found?
Ooh, oh my gosh, I already know this one. Okay, so I was watching Terminator the other day, and one of the punks at the beginning of Terminator is Bill Paxton. And I had to go and Google it, and it's Bill Paxton. It's crazy.
Me and Amy have this thing for people who don't know where, like, all we watch TV or movies, we're always IMDBing everything about it. So we'll go down the app and, like, look up an actor and be like, I wonder what they used to be in. Who are they dating? And we just, like, creep on them. And
go down the rabbit hole.
Oh, it's such a rabbit hole. IMDB is the best.
So, what are your favorite podcasts?
Ooh, right now I'm listening to My Favorite Murder, which is awesome. If you like kind of like murder mystery shows, it's that mixed with comedy. If that makes – it sounds horrible. I know. It sounds very psychopathic.
No, I've heard of it. It's in my queue of ones to listen to.
Oh, it's so good. The other day. Yeah, it's really good. That one and then all the standard ones like Radiolab and that kind of thing for just like cultural.
Gotcha. If you were an ice cream flavor, what would each of you be? That's just the weirdest one. That's from Bri Jane. He's got more I got to follow up with. So
I love that. I would say I'm like cookie dough because like I look kind of vanilla, but then like I surprise you sometimes. Didn't that sound like a debt dating show where you have to be like,
it totally sounded like, what's that Jenny McCarthy dating show they used to have? That's two. Singled out. Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's hilarious. Jen said that I'm cotton candy and I fully agree. It's my favorite flavor and it's way too much and
way too colorful in the best possible sense. And it leaves a mark on your tongue.
It leaves a mark, good or bad.
All right. Follow up to the ice cream question. Would you come in a cone?
Oh, that's hilarious. I think I go for both.
Amy, you would come in one of those big waffle cones dipped in chocolate and sprinkles.
Yes. And Jen would definitely come in a waffle cone. Classic, delicious. Yes.
Gotcha. Well, that answers the last part, which was, are there sprinkles?
Of course. Is that a question? Who even asked that?
I mean, I feel like that's a given.
That's a given.
And then the last one, what's your adult beverage of the moment?
Oh, my gosh.
Ooh, oh, my gosh. There is this sipping chocolate, which is just like a fancy way of saying hot chocolate, that they sell at Trader Joe's. And because it's been so cold here lately, i.e. 60 degrees, I'll just make some hot cocoa and then just like fill it up. Like it's half hot cocoa and then half of Bailey's and Kahlua.
Jen just gets lit by the fire listening to ebooks on adult hot chocolate. It's hilarious.
So what ebooks are you listening to?
So that was one of them, Neverwhere by Neil Gaiman. And then also, oh gosh, what was that one called? I was listening to, there was this one called The Good Nurse, and it was a true crime story about this nurse, this guy who was murdering patients, not like hardcore, but like doing it by putting the wrong like fluids into their IVs and like knowing that that would happen, but just doing it so subtly. And he just kept getting passed around hospital to hospital because they didn't want to be held liable. It's awful, but it's
terrible.
Also really,
it makes you terrified to go to the to the hospital because you're like,
oh yeah, but it's so super scary. Compelling. You should. And the guy who narrates it is like so good. Oh,
and this guy killed like 300 people. It's insane that he got away with it just because these hospitals didn't want to get sued. Isn't that horrible?
Mm-hmm.
Jason,
that makes me not want to go to the doctor.
Don't
anymore.
Ever trust the doctors. Is what I'm trying to say. The government's after us.
I already think my doctor's bad enough. I just don't think he's out to kill me.
I know. My freaking doctor told me that last year was my last year to have kids. How rude is that? I was like,
I didn't realize that there was like a deadline.
Exactly. I was like, first of all,
realize
sir,
at a certain point
we're in the
21st
century here. He's like very old and very old school. But anyway, I don't like my doctor.
You're not in like your...
I'm not even that old.
Those years.
I mean, I don't want to say how old I am because then people will know, but I think I'm going to start lying too.
Just tell me what you're going to lie about so I can lie too.
I know. Me and Jen
we have to get our stories straight.
You guys got to get your story straight on how old
exactly.
you are.
Exactly. Let's go with something. Actually, let's just say we're older. Let's say we're 50 and then people will be super, super impressed.
Well, at that point, you've just aged extremely
exactly.
well.
Exactly. See? So. And then you're just really impressive.
So, cool. Well, Jen and Amy, where can people, kind of wrapping up, where can people find you online?
Ooh, we weren't smart. We didn't get all of the matching handles. So just Google Chutzpah. It's like there's only us and a Jewish rapper who's really awesome. So either way, you'll be delightfully surprised.
Otherwise, well, I feel like I'm going to have to look him up and link to him in the show notes too.
Right? I know. I'm always like feel bad that we like are kind of stealing his SEO.
And also link to the guy who has the Odds and Sods handle because people always mistag as just straight Odds and Sods, and it's some British guy with only two photos, and it's hilarious. But we're not Odds and Sods. We're Odds and Sods Co., and we're actually that across all of the platforms, which is good. So definitely follow us, and you can grab some pins and stuff on our website, which is oddsandsods.co.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. We end each podcast by saying, go out and hug some necks, which is basically
Mike Jones.
It's Mike Jones. Yeah. Since you've been to Creative South, you kind of know what it means of, you know, go out and make friends and don't be strangers. Would you all mind taking us out by saying that?
Oh, sure. Go out and hug some necks.
Go out and hug them.
Awesome. Thank you, ladies. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Talk to you later.
You can find out more about Chutzpah on Twitter at @get_chutzpah. And be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with them. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Facebook at @CreativeSOPod. And follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CreativeSouthGA or over at CreativeSouth.com. And I'm at Jay Frostel on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram.
For a limited time, new Skillshare customers can get their first 3 months for just 99 cents to get unlimited access to thousands of classes when you sign up at Skillshare.com using promo code CreativeSouth. What are you waiting for? Start learning today. And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at Patreon.com/CreativeSouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.